We have as our guest on this program today Mr. W. A. Wilson. We're imposing a little bit on Mr. Wilson's time, I know, but I have looked forward for a long time, Mr. Wilson, to talking to you about WOPI. I've been associated with the station now this time for 4 years, and I knew about it, of course, when I worked in the area before. WOPI has enjoyed quite a famous reputation throughout the whole area for many, many years, and we were talking on previous programs about how the station became established to start with, and Mr. Wilson's idea, sort of a brainchild, I suppose, at first, seeing the need for communications. Mr. Wilson could have spent his life, if he wanted to, as a telegraph operator, but you wanted to branch out from that and get away from the keys and get into the microphones, is that right, sir? So we could talk to more people without wires than we can with wires, huh?
That's right.
Well, Mr. Wilson, certainly a pleasure to have you as our guest on this series of little programs concerning WOPI, and I might add to our listeners here, these are strictly unrehearsed. They're just off the cuff, so to speak, conversations that I'm privileged to have with one of the most respected gentlemen that I know in the broadcasting industry, the dean of broadcasters in the Tri-Cities area, in fact, in the whole this part of the country, Mr. W. A. Wilson. There's been much happened throughout the years. We've added a lot, or rather he has added a lot, to the stature of WOPI, and namely, I think about 46, was it, FM?
The FM's established December the 25th on Christmas Day, 1946, on Whitetop Mountain.
And why did you establish FM, Mr. Wilson? You must have seen some future need for that particular...
Well, we were informed by the FCC previous to this installation that unless we established an FM station, we'd be out of business because they're going to take all the AM stations off of the air, which is very misleading.
And certainly was.
But there's 950 of us went into FM after they put out this notice that your AM station was going to be abolished. And so at a great expense, we installed a 10,000-watt FM station on Whitetop Mountain in 1946.
Uh-huh. What did they propose to do with FM? I mean, why were they so insistent that you'd...
Well, because FM was static-free, I understand, yeah. and that's they had the whole idea. But they found out they were wrong that they couldn't eliminate AM. So FM's been dragging along for all these years.
I think that would have been infringing on the rights of anybody who had an AM station to tell them that they were going to take it away from them, wouldn't it?
Well, that's just what they say.
It amounted to that.
Just, well, get FM or are you going to be out of the broadcast business?
Hmm.
I'd like to say one thing, just about one little incident happened on Whitetop Mountain. On February the 27th, 1947, that wasn't very long after we went on the air, they had a very heavy snowstorm, not only in Bristol, but more on Whitetop Mountain. They had drifts up there, I guess there's 25 and 30 feet high. And it seems that the two young persons were up there, a man and his wife, they didn't prepare for food for any length of time. So they run out of food, and the only way, they couldn't get off of the mountain, even though we furnished them a Jeep, but they couldn't even get off of the Jeep to come to town. It was all ice and snow. So we contacted a gentleman by the name of King up at Chill High, Virginia, who had a plane. And so we arranged for him to drop food on these big drifts of snow in burlap sacks. We didn't break anything. Of course, it wasn't any glass, but the canned goods and things like that. And also sent a plane from here, from Combs Airport. And this plane from here got lost, and I guess we found it. I never have heard too much about that plane. What happened is the snow was so thick, and the clouds were right on the mountain.
Yeah.
But this boy from Mr. King from up at Chill High, he found an opening in the cloud, and he just dived down through that opening and dropped his food, and it saved the day, a week for those people there at the transmitter.
Hmm. What things you have to do to keep on the air, huh?
That's right.
There's an old saying in show business, you know, the show must go on.
That's right.
So FM had to continue to broadcast. Did you, at that time, entertain any ideas, or did you prosecute the going along with FM as sports media? Could you bust it up and use it for that like we
did? Well, we relayed quite a few baseball games. For instance, when Bristol would be playing in Wells, West Virginia, or mm-hmm. Bluefield, where we would rebroadcast it from there.
Keep so it on FM.
Take it up on FM and then rebroadcast it on AM.
Was there very many FM receivers in the area at that time?
Well, there wasn't too many in 1946 or 47, but it was later, I think it was about 1950, when we began to relay baseball games.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly is a fine medium for the use for baseball. We use it, you know, for that. We pick
oh,
it up
yes.
And it gives you, as you said, static-free broadcasting. As a matter of fact, it's about the clearest radio, I suppose, in that part of it.
Well, our FM covered a radius of 200 miles.
200 miles.
200 miles. We had letters from all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, we still have it, and it's not on the mountain right now. Were you the one who moved it down to its present location?
We moved it, not at the present. We moved it. We had our transmitter building on Old Abden Pike, known as the McChesney Heights now.
I know where that is.
And we brought it there and installed it. And then we had, they sold that property and we had to move, so we moved it to Delaney Street. We call it Wilson Heights.
Yeah, where it is now.
That's where it is now.
And now I think it's all in one tower now, you know.
We had it all in one tower, more or less.
You did?
Yes. See, we had a vertical antenna.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we first established the station in 1929, we had a horizontal antenna. It was only 80 feet high. And we had three wires strung between the two towers, and it was a horizontal.
Yeah, three wires.
Then in 1939, the FCC requested that we move from West State Street to get out of town where there wouldn't be too much people are residing, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we moved to on the Old Abden Highway.
You were talking to me the other day on another interview on the air, Mr. Wilson, and you said when you started that there wasn't any FCC. What sort of an organization did they have?
Well, it didn't have any exactly. It was under the Department of Commerce.
Oh, yeah.
And Judge Sykes was the whole boss. And it was he just had one room up there, of course. And it wasn't about 200, I guess it might have been 200 stations on the air at that time. Mm-hmm. And now there's about 6,000 in there or more.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say there was. Well, it's quite evident, I think, you as a businessman must know that radio industry as a whole, any type of thing like that where it is so much of it, couldn't possibly police itself. So I could see the value of an FCC. When did they first come out with FCC as we know it today?
About 1930, I think it was.
1930.
31 or something like that.
I know there used to be one of our neighbors up in West Virginia, Judge Robinson, was chairman of the FCC for quite some time,
yeah.
I think. And I knew that old gentleman. He lived up in the country above us there. He didn't stay in there very long. FCC, of course, has served a very useful purpose, and there's times, I suppose, when all broadcasters are more or less critical. Perhaps, but they always have a way to express, and they certainly you do have a very intact organization, the Association of Broadcasters, who look after the industry as a whole. We'd like to talk some more with Mr. Wilson. I hope you folks will stay tuned, because these are interesting conversations with Mr. W.A. Wilson, who was the founder of WOPI Radio as we have it here today, 41 years ago. So just stay tuned to this station for the next in this series of programs.